Welcome back to Sports Day for Kia. Step up into the all-new Kia Stonic SUV and Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That is Red Energy. Of course, the man who knows all the insides and the outsides to the media and its interaction with sport is our own Ashley Brown, who's back at work for the AFL Record, and he's back at work here on Sports Day. Welcome back to you, Ashley, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys. Always good to be back with you talking all these things.
And it is amazing that we're going to digress to some degree. We normally focus on the great sport of AFL footy, but let's start with tennis and how the media and politics in particular have interacted. The sport and politics intermingling has probably never been so in your face as it has been over the last 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, the whole story around the Australian Open and the players doing the quarantine has been really interesting. I've enjoyed following the coverage from some of the overseas journals as well, and it's interesting. I don't think there's a lot of sympathy for the players from the overseas tennis media. You know, a guy like Ben Rothenberg from New York Times has been reporting this really well, and he's putting the overseas tennis fan in the eyes of the Melbourne tennis people, and I think he's basically telling the players they've got to, you know, suck it up and how lucky they are to be here given what Melbourne's been through.
Do you think that the politicians, and I'm talking the heavyweights here, are actually making hay while the sun shines? I think Dan Andrews has been under enormous pressure, and it was if the Joker and his requirements gave him the free kick to regain control of the argument. Of course, they've been under enormous heat because they're allowing infected tennis players into the state when your average punter who pays tax and land tax and rates in this city, he's not allowed out if he happened to get his timing wrong. And yet you can almost see the Premier just grab at this opportunity to have a decent crack at the Joker. And then, of course, Bill Shorten, who has re-emerged from the pack, and he's done so today with what's been described as a withering spray for tennis whingers.
Well, I haven't seen the Bill Shorten remarks, but certainly Djokovic has got no credibility whatsoever because he is, firstly, he's not an anti-vaxxer, Jared. He's certainly sceptical when it comes to vaccines. And then, of course, he was in a posting a super spreader event in the European summer. So
yeah, that was a mistake, but that was definitely a mistake. But I think some of the stuff he asked for was reasonably credible. And the scoffing at his suggestion that we should be in houses with tennis courts probably was mainly done by people who didn't understand that that's exactly what they did in Wimbledon.
Yeah, and it's exactly what Matt Damon's doing right now.
Well, there was no Wimbledon this year. Look, there's a couple of tennis-related issues from Djokovic that were probably fair to ask for. The thing I'm interested with the Australian Open is, I mean, what people know, and we love this tournament. We've taken to heart. Mm. The city stops for 2 weeks for tennis. But it's just the year that the people of Melbourne have to endure the tennis as opposed to embrace it because they've got to play the tournament. I mean, I'm just fascinated to see what the people, the rank and file people, but apart from the diehard tennis people, what most Melbourne people think about the tennis being here this year. And, you know, is there sentiment for it not coming this year? I'm not quite sure. I can't quite read the room.
No, the room is definitely saying we shouldn't be having the tournament. I mean, as much as each and every poll is not scientific in the various outlets, when it's running at 75% to 25%, it's a fair indicator. Do you think that Tennis Australia and the Victorian government, who have both absolutely been desperate to put this event on, could actually rue the day that they made that decision?
Well, they'll rue it if there's an outbreak of the virus into the public as a result of being spread through the tennis. Absolutely, they'll certainly rule it because the people in Melbourne are fed up. They don't want to go through what we went through last winter. So they'll really be on the tenterhooks, as they say, to make sure that the players do what they're supposed to do and the tournament proceeds as it should. So it's a tough old another week and a half with the players in quarantine before they come out. So it's going to be a really anxious time, I think, for the government and for Tennis Australia as they ride out this quarantine period.
One of the big sticking points, of course, is that Dan Andrews went big trying to quell the heated debate and the heated questioning as to whether or not tennis players should be coming and why, in fact, we're having this tournament. And Chip Legrand put him on notice today when he asked the Premier which credible tennis person had suggested, as the Premier had opined, that the Australian Open's Grand Slam status is imperiled. And he answered in this way, and I quote, "If I say to you that my logic tells me this, well then, that answers your question." Now, what responsibility has Chip Le Grand got to just cop that on the chin and basically saying, okay, Mr. Premier, I'll take the clip?
Great question.
What responsibility has he got to say, let's dig a little bit deeper, let's go and ask Craig Tiley, because no one at Tennis Australia is going to actually criticise the Premier, but at the same time, I suspect they're going to look long and hard for an answer that toes a party line without actually towing the party line, because it would appear as if it's absolutely fallacious.
Yeah, Chip should be going a lot harder at that question than whatever answer Dan Andrews gave him today. I mean, 20 years ago, there was always the fear with the Australian Open that it was going to move, and that's why the government has spent so much money, you know, into billions of dollars now on the infrastructure at Melbourne Park, and just making sure the prize money was equal, and that it's in every respect almost a better Grand Slam than the others, to make it worth the players' while to come here. And that insecurity, I think, still exists in some quarters. That, you know, all it will take is to not play it once and for the tournament to be played elsewhere in China, in Asia, perhaps China or Singapore, and we'd lose it permanently.
I mean, there's no mechanism for us to lose the Australian Open. Now, China may put on another tournament. China may put on another tournament and throw a stack of money at it, and they've done that half a dozen times. We've spoken to tournament director Peter Johnson about this. But there's no way known Australia can lose Grand Slam status, because there's no provision. Say again?
There's no provision for it.
Scoop has said it perfectly.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it's highly, highly unlikely that we would lose our Grand Slam status. But Andrews would be fearful of keeping the window open a slightly bit ajar for it to happen. And he wouldn't want to be seen as a, you know, if you're trying to minimise a risk, you don't want to be the Premier who lost the Grand Slam status of Australian Open. As I said,
but he shut down the Grand Prix only 12 months ago, so it wasn't concerned about losing the Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think it was a lot more. We knew a lot far less about the coronavirus in March 2020 than we do in January 2021. But I hope Chip goes hard. I hope Chip doesn't just take what Dan Andrews said as an answer. I look forward to reporting in The Age, you know, going forward as to what he discovers.
I look forward to Craig Tiley, Scoop, answering your question when you finally nail him and say, okay, Craig, have we got any chance of losing this? Because I'll be interested in his answer.
Well, I think the answer will be no.
Well, I don't think it will be no. I think it'll be a version of no that gives it an out for the Premier.
Potentially. But as we discussed, you know, last night with the Chief Health Officer, who's playing politics more than he's playing health at the moment. You know, it's all very political at the moment. So it's all, as Travis Cloak once famously said, it's all, is it smoke and shadows behind the windows?
Smoke and shadows inside Pandora's box.
Hey, Ash, just changing tack if I can. I just wanted to ask you about the situation going on at your Hawks. I don't know how much Jared's spent talking about this last week, but I'm only back this week. Just everything going on. Graham Wright, you know, one of the biggest allies to Alistair Clarkson, walks away in January. You know, the talk is that he has been frustrated for some time with the Hawks. The Hawks are not happy about him leaving. You've got Jono Patton going through what he's going through. It's a bit messy at the moment down at Waverley.
They've got a very big few months coming up there, certainly. The Graham Wright situation is, I mean, Jeff Kennett's trying to put out there that he was going to retire and that had been agreed upon. And then, of course, Cog would come in with the big offer to go there.
There's no way that he was going to retire. I mean, Jared, seriously, yeah. Does Jeff think that we're all going to cop that? If he retired, he would have had 17 contract offers on the table for him the next morning.
Yes, you may well be right, Scoop, but I'm not in a position to say yes or no.
Jeez, I'm getting fed up with people in footy treating us all like children. Go on, Ash.
It's a big few months for Hawthorn, because really this is our, you know, the way football works, this is Alistair Clarkson's contract year as well, because it's 2 years ago. I don't think the Hawks nor Clarkson would want to go into next season with that hanging over their head. So there's a lot going on at Waverley, and the decision they make for who is the new head of football is going to have a lot of big decisions to make. There's big decisions about the list and what they do going forward. There's the coach as well. So it's almost a thankless... it'd be a well-paid job because they've got a bit of money out at Waverley, but it'd be a thankless task as well because they've got a lot to do. But they have had happier times I think, at Hawthorn than stuff they're going through at the moment. I think the Jonathan Patton decision, Jonathan Patton's story is a very disappointing one for them. And you wonder whether they did their complete due diligence before the recruiting.
I know what I suspect Jeff Kennett would say, the former Premier, if you challenged him on this particular issue.
Go on.
I reckon he might say, if I say that to you, Scoop, that my logic tells me this, well then, that answers your question.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Kennett. I'll just go back into my hole.
Moving on, we've had a very interesting summer of cricket. Some people say it's been unbelievable. I've got to say, I haven't been as enthralled with the cricket as some of the commentators tell me I should have been. But it's a funny sport at the present time. It seems to, for me personally, and I've spoken to a lot of people who seem to have a similar reaction, you wax and wane with how intentionally you get into cricket. And I think right now I'm waning on the BBL. The test cricket matches are always an in-and-out scenario. Right now it's probably, you'd have to say on balance, it's been quite an interesting series.
I think there's huge divergence. I think the test series has been wonderful. I think the BBL has just been mindless fodder for an evening. And, I still struggle to understand some of the new rules they bring in for every summer for the BBL. But the test series has been quite captivating. I think if you would have said that India, having been bowled out for 36 in the second innings of the first test, would be positioned now in the last session of the last test, getting a chance to retain the Warder Gavaskar Trophy, I think it's been a phenomenal performance by them, because they usually don't play so well away from home. So I think it's been a really interesting test series. But the summer cricket has a lot of things to work through, and the quality of playing the BBL is one of those. When do you play the one-day matches? We're going to have a farcical situation of two Australian teams playing overseas at different times in the next few weeks. The one-day team or the T20 team playing, I think, in New Zealand, what it is, and the Australian team playing in the test team in South Africa, which I can't quite get my head around. Maybe I'm a bit old-fashioned, but I always thought there was one Australian team.
So one final word, and that is that the Amazon trailers came out, which is going to give us an insight into each and every club, Ash, or just a number of clubs?
Just six clubs this year, in the series this year, making their markets called, and the teaser came out today, which I think you can drop in the AFL website and through Amazon. If it's half as good as what some of the overseas sporting documentaries Amazon have done, and the one on the Australian Test Cricket team as well from last year, it'll be a fascinating series. I do know the access. You know, at a time when journos were pretty much locked out of covering footy clubs because of the coronavirus, that didn't apply to the Amazon team had an access all areas past. So doing a bit of digging around that for the pre-season AFL record, speaking to some people involved, and I think it's going to be a really illuminating series. We're going to learn a lot more about the inner workings of AFL football from the documentary series, I think.
Was there anybody at the Kangaroos being followed? Because it would appear to me of all the clubs, it was the Kangaroos who probably had the most difficulty coping with the ravages of the hub.
Yeah, the Kangaroos made a complete hash of so much of last season. Unfortunately, the Kangaroos weren't one of the clubs. But I believe over the next two seasons, all clubs are going to feature. So either this year or next, the cameras will be behind the Kangaroos, at the Kangaroos. It might be a good topic point for us to talk down the track is which six clubs we'd like them to focus on this year, which clubs we think are the ones they should be following. It might be the most interesting to look at in 12 months' time.
Ash, great to have you on.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back.
Ashley Brown there from the AFL record.
There's a story you broke, wasn't it, the Amazon story?
Yeah, everyone said it was wrong. I coughed a lot of heat for that, even though it wasn't that big
a story. Mate, you cop heat for everything. You just got to sit back and take the credits when I give them to you.
You know what? We've got it completely backwards in this country.
In what way?
Well, if I was anyone that was paying any money, including the money that this radio station pays for TV rights, for radio rights, or if I was Channel 7 or Fox, I'd be that pissed off. You know, they pay so much money. And then Amazon come in and say, actually, we're going to have full access. Full access. The AFSR, we're getting a little bit of coin on the side, so why not?
Yeah, so I think that the clubs are at fault at this, and I stand to be corrected, but I would think that the clubs themselves as guilty as anybody.
No, in fact, that's a good point. You're actually right. The clubs who, you know, Lawrence, our producer, will ring up and say, oh, we'd like to speak to Paddy Cripps.
Yep.
And they say, no, actually, we're not putting him up this week.
Clubs are getting a bit of coin, aren't they?
I think they're getting a little slice.
You give the clubs a tickle, you're going to get a response. It's like when cricketers and footballers have books that they want to promote.
Yeah.
You get free access.
But LeBron James, biggest basketball in the world, walks off court and every single journalist that's got accreditation gets to stand in the locker room next to his shower and interview him. It's backwards.
Well, it's going to happen here one day, Scoop. I'm not sure if it's for the betterment of the game. I've never been quite convinced that the open access is a good thing. I'm not sure that we learn anything about putting a microphone under a player's beak as he's running off the ground tells us anything, given that you get one question. And he gives you a yes, no answer.
That's not access, though, is it? That like the stuff of them walking off at halftime. The cameras like it because it looks good because they're on the ground. They don't tell us anything.
Mm.
I tell you who told us something. Geez, Barbora was good again tonight.
Oh, Barbora.
Huge.
I had a good chat, as I told Barbora, to Peter Johnson. I didn't give her exactly what Jono told me, but Jono used to be the vice president. Well, he was the vice president of women's tennis worldwide.
Yep.
And he basically just told us that she's solid in everything. That's why she made the semi-final of
Wimbledon
2 years ago, and she won the Wimbledon doubles title with Shea Su Wei.
Wow, I can't believe you remember that.
Yeah, it took me about 10 times to get it through. The Taiwanese young lady, and she'll be going, she told us earlier, she's going into battle with her again this season.
We need a break on Sports Day. Melbourne City captain Scott Jamieson's going to join us next.